And good morning, one and all. I'm Farm Director Mick Kerr, sitting in for Terry Loomis here on Inside Agriculture. Heard daily on Ag News 890 and Farm News and Real Country Thunder 106.1 in Lisbon and Fargo and 910 Classic Country KCJB in Minot. Welcome to the show. U.S. barley growers continue to look for opportunities to grow market share and increase their price as well. So when it comes to finding both, Ryan Legrand with the U.S. Grain Council in Mexico City, all we need to do is look to our market to the south.
Mexico, for a number of years, has been the top market for U.S. barley, and it'll continue to be so for years to come. There's some exciting expansions going on right now.
Legrand explains the importance of Mexico to the U.S. barley industry.
CCM Heineken is looking to increase their capacity within the next 2 years by 15% by investing in a new brewery located in Chihuahua. That's in northwest Mexico, just south of El Paso.
Why is the demand growing in Mexico?
Modelo, which a lot of you will probably be familiar with, they produce Corona as well as several other brands of beer. They're building a new brewery located in the Yucatan Peninsula out by Cancun. And they are also going to expand their current malting facility, which I believe is in the state of Zacatecas, right in the central part of Mexico. They're expanding that malting facility, and it will demand 126,000 tons of malted barley per year. So we know that a good part of that will be sourced from Mexico, but it will provide the opportunity for additional U.S. tons to come in.
And finally, Legrand says there's another big expansion that is brewing.
Constellation Brands, which is another major brewer down there in Mexico, they're investing in a new brewery in Baja California, and they're expanding their current brewery in Coahuila, which is in north central Mexico. And with all these investments combined, Mexico beer production looks to increase by 40% over the next several years. So definitely positive for U.S. barley and for U.S. malting barley.
Legrand says barley growers need to recognize the importance of the Mexican market.
We need to really value Mexico as the important customer that it is. You know, we're right next door. We're connected by land. And, you know, U.S. exports just naturally flow to the country of Mexico. So as marketers, as producers, we need to pay a lot of attention to Mexico, make sure the needs are met down there, and make sure we're doing everything we can to continue exporting all of our grains down there and continue with Mexico as the number one market for U.S. grain products.
Tony Legrand, U.S. Grains Council in the Mexico City office. Sitting in for Terry Loomis, who has the rest of the week off. Topping farm news this morning, the National Association of Wheat Growers is looking for a new CEO. Jim Palmer has had that job for the last 3 years, but yesterday announced he's resigning at the end of May. National Association of Wheat Growers and Outlook Montana farmer President Gordon Stoner lauded Palmer's tenure, says Palmer's been a tremendous and tireless advocate for the wheat industry and its producers. But family comes first.
Jim is a new grandfather. He owns farmland in Missouri, and I think he's feeling the call to come home. His elderly mother is in Missouri, family there. And I think Jim has just viewed that his initial term contract is coming up, and just thought it might perhaps be a good time to make a change. And as we form a search committee, 2018 Farm Bill, not all that far away, and we will certainly begin a national search for leadership that can lead us into the next farm bill and make sure wheat is well represented at the table as negotiations begin.
Stoner says the organization is in strong financial position and excellent staff will serve as Jim Palmer's legacy at the National Association of Wheat Growers. A report by the United Nations Environment Program says almost half of the world's population will suffer severe water stress by the year 2030. A new report by the program finds that as the global population rises, increased urbanization, climate change, and a shift in how food is consumed are likely to increase future demand for water. Under current trends, demand for water will exceed supply by 40% by the year 2030, forcing governments to spend $200 billion per year on upstream water supply as demand outstrips cheaper forms of supply. USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service will invest $41 million in a three-year initiative to support farmers in Ohio, Michigan, and Indiana working to improve water quality in the western Lake Erie Basin. NRCF's chief, Jason Weller, announced the initiative, which is to help farmers implement conservation measures to reduce runoff from farms entering the region's waterways. National Farmers Union accepting Beginning Farmer Institute applications. The 2016-2017 program class offers hands-on training regarding many of the challenges beginning farmers may face in their careers, like business planning, access to capital, land acquisition, and marketing. More information about the National Farmers Union Beginning Farmer Institute available at their website, nfu.org. The renewable fuel standard seems secure for now, despite attempts by some lawmakers in Congress to repeal the 2007 law. But top Senate Environment Democrat Barbara Boxer of California recently sided with the renewable fuel standard and corn ethanol against Public Works Committee Chair James Inhofe of Oklahoma. Boxer, who usually sides with environmentalists, also found herself against those in the environmental community who have taken aim at corn ethanol and other homegrown biofuels. Boxer says she'll do everything.
To those who claim that the RFS will raise gasoline and food prices, it's best to start with the facts. First, the EPA has shown that complying with the RFS does not increase gas prices. Second, the price of corn today is roughly the same as it was in 07, when the RFS was established.
Boxer says she will do everything in her power to keep the law on the books, but concedes the EPA has problems implementing the RFS, including missing volume-setting deadlines and maybe setting volumes way too low. Chairman Inhofe argues that that is why the RFS needs to be reconsidered.
EPA mismanagement is compounded by concerns that the compliance market is not working properly. Biofuel production has not reached the levels that were expected when the program was created. In recent years, gasoline demand has leveled partially as a result of EPA's vehicle efficiency requirements, while the RFS has increased.
Inhofe insists most of the rationale for the RFS has disappeared, that the U.S. now produces more oil and imports less, but imports more ethanol while waiving key RFS requirements. Biofuel groups filed a lawsuit in January to force the EPA to reverse course and boost biofuel volumes. The Arc County payments for the 2014 Farm Bill was what many farmers in the upper Midwest chose blindly and confidently several years ago when the 2014 Farm Bill was released. Many went to many meetings over the winter and finally decided in the spring at the deadline that Arc County payments were the best route to go. And now many are a little disappointed. Kent Thiessy is farm management analyst and vice president of MinStar Bank in Lake Crystal, Minnesota. Yesterday, he told me,
because of the complex formula they use for the Arc County program, it's based on national average prices, so the price calculations are the same all over the country, but the yield part of the formula is county by county, and what you're doing is comparing actual county yields based on national ag statistics yields that are adjusted by FSA compared to a five-year average. And so as the dynamics of the formula, as those numbers change, if the average in one county drops compared to another county and maybe the yield is a few bushels difference, all of a sudden you can go from having $30, $40, $50 an acre difference in payments from one county to the next right across the county line. And I think that's what's become kind of confusing to folks, and especially when these payments aren't coming out till a year later. You know, I think some producers say, well, you know, I'm 2 miles from the county line and I'm getting no payment, and right across the line, the farmer over there is getting $50 an acre. What's the deal here? I will say this, the formula is working the way it was set up by USDA, and I think the way it was intended in the Farm Bill. It's just that we've had some pretty interesting years production-wise in many parts of the upper Midwest in the last few years, and those counties that are particularly affected here, if they had poor corn yields in both 13 and 14, as some counties did, then one of those years gets calculated into this formula for the average yield, and because you drop the high and the low yield of the previous 5 years, and if that happens, then your average or benchmark yield tended to come down. Some counties had their average benchmark yield drop anywhere from 6 to 12 bushels an acre from 14 to 15, which lowers your maximum payment, but that means at the same yield level, your odds of getting a payment also go down. So, and then, of course, 2015, at least down in the southern two-thirds of Minnesota and eastern South Dakota and a little bit up probably southeast North Dakota, had some of the best corn yields they've ever had. And if you had the real good yields against a dropping average, that meant your odds of getting significant payments went down along with that.
Ken Thiessy, Farm Management Analyst and Vice President of MinStar Bank, Lake Crystal, Minnesota. You're listening to Inside Agriculture on 910 KCJB, Minot, and on Ag News 890 and Farm News and Real Country Thunder 106.1. For Terry Loomis, I'm Mick Kerr. As we talked about before the break, the corn payments, the corn market is confusing. And now, 3 years into a grain market slump, U.S. farmers will likely plant more corn, taking a calculated gamble that higher sales will help them make up for falling prices without triggering even more declines. Forecasts suggest that at current prices, growers will be able to cover their variable expenses like seed and fertilizer, and by planting more and scrimping on everything from labor to crop chemicals, farmers hope to make a profit, excluding land rent, of course. Strategy marks a reversal from the last time that prices for corn, soybeans, and wheat fell for 3 years, which was back in the mid-1980s. At that time, farmers cut production and prices began rising. Illinois farmer Dave Kestel said he'd be lucky to break even on the corn he planned to start planting next month on his farm in Manhattan, Illinois, an hour's drive southwest of Chicago. He aims to plant about the same area as last year, about 500 acres, despite lower prices. Vermont's Attorney General recently issued an enforcement memo on the state's GMO labeling law that takes effect July 1st. Vermont Attorney General William Sorrell said last week that while the law takes effect in July, all products must be properly labeled by January 1st, 2017. The enforcement delay grants producers on store shelves in July a, quote, safe harbor in regards to their shelf life. In a statement, the Attorney General said unless there is evidence that a manufacturer distributed a mislabeled product after July 1st this year, they will not bring an enforcement action or seek fines for those products. Any products distributed before the law takes effect this July will not be pursued as a violation if the product remains on store shelves in Vermont past the start of 2017. Out in the rural areas, drugs are a problem. And President Obama and the Ag Department will join medical professions and law enforcement officers at the National Prescription Drug Abuse and Heroin Summit in Atlanta today to announce a series of actions addressing the opioid abuse epidemic in America. Yesterday, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack delivered a keynote address at the summit, and he announced his plans to travel to New Hampshire, Missouri, Nevada, Mississippi, and Appalachia in coming months to participate in town halls. The gatherings will bring together local and state government partners, the health community, and other stakeholders to raise awareness of the issue and discuss possible solutions. Vilsack said USDA is making about $1.4 million available through its Rural Health and Safety Education Competitive Grants Program with the goal of enhancing the quality of life in rural areas through less drug abuse. And that's what's happening today inside agriculture. For Terry Loomis, I'm Farm Director Mick Kerr.